morning and coming to our session. Waiting for this to load. I don't have any relationships to disclose. We can. So I wanted to acknowledge my collaborators on this project. For the evaluation, we collaborated with Dr. Judy Wiley-Rosette from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, Ali Bukhari, this is his thesis, his master's thesis project at the Institute of Human Nutrition at Columbia, and Laura Gagne from Urban Assembly. So I'll give you a little bit of background about Family Cook to put this, to put our research I'm presenting today into context. We're really not a research institution, we're an educational organization, and we have curriculum from K through 12 at this point, well, K through adult actually at this point, and we're called Family Cook Productions because it is the whole family that we're working with. We have programs in school. This is a career that definitely chose me. I did not choose it. I was a food and wine writer and a restaurant publicist in New York City in the early 90s when I went through a pretty devastating divorce of two very wild and crazy little boys. And I was looking for a way I could get a meal on the table, but I couldn't get them to sit down, and I couldn't get them to eat the kind of foods I'd wanted them to eat. So as they started to cook with me, it just sort of happened naturally, but I really seized on it because it made a huge difference. And what I was really trying to do, our goals and our programs have two, there's two goals. There is the dietary quality goals, but there's also a family strengthening goals. Because if we consider what some of the barriers that we know that families face, it's not just knowing how to cook, it's not even just access. We can talk about families at a higher socioeconomic strata, and they're still challenged with an attitude maybe that maybe they're a career person, they shouldn't be cooking, but really we all can benefit from making the mealtime a family time. So with that, and I mentioned our research partners, this was very critical for us at Family Cook, and the reason is because not being researchers, I cannot tell you, I mean, I always knew from the very beginning, doing this 12, 13 years now, that we were going to have to, that it was important to measure the impacts that we were having. But we never were able to be very successful with the kind of rigor that we wanted in our evaluations for many, always because of lack of money, because schools, gathering data in schools is so challenging. And when we moved into after school for a number of years, from about 2002 until recently, we were doing mostly after school interventions. We found that that was even worse. If you can imagine, in after school, we had at one point a project with 28 after school sites in New York City across five boroughs. We had parent surveys pre and post. We had student surveys 9 years and older, and there weren't that many children that were 9 years old. And do you know that we got about 12 matched surveys? There were about 20 students, 20 or 30 students in each one of those 28 sites. That was a nightmare. So. So this is the, I'm just going to give you a little background on this elementary curriculum so you understand what happens in the high school that I'm going to present our data on. So this Look Who's Cooking program started out in school time with cooking, with parents being involved, helping in the classroom. Not every parent can do that, but there's always a family night that launches it. So the parents are very much a part, and they get on board in the very beginning before the intervention starts, that they're being supported at home for their children to eat better. And the children are making recipes, multicultural recipes, every week. Goes on about 12 to 15 weeks. We're now starting this a little differently. Instead of having 12 or 15 weeks in succession, we're doing a dose intervention. So a fall, we ground everything in the seasons. So we're doing 3 weeks in the fall, 3 weeks in the winter, 3 weeks in the early spring, and then 3 weeks of cooking in the garden. This has made a big difference in the sort of sustainability of the program. But I want to also mention that in addition to the parent component, we have recipes that are concepts. So they're making meals, they're making whole meals, usually a one-pot meal, but it's always a concept that when they're actually preparing it, the instructors that we train to do this are actually explaining, are actually asking them, so what else would you put in this? You know, how else would you make this at home? So that's going home with the child, ideas about how they would make a stir fry differently, how they make risotto differently. And then they take those ideas home to the parents, and then when we, you know, are doing our qualitative and doing focus groups, we hear that they want, that the children want to put everything that's in the freezer in their stir fry. So So the kinds of, again, I mentioned when we did the over the years with the elementary program, didn't have the most rigor in our evaluations, but we did find some important associations, and those were that some of the main things we were trying to achieve, which was eating together as a family, eating dinners cooked at home, and adults preparing fresh vegetables at home, those were associated with, better dietary choices. So that was important. We figured that would be the case, but we were seeing those associations. So when we got to last year, we were invited to work on a project with Urban Assembly Schools. They are managers of 40 middle and high schools in our mayor's small school initiatives, so they're public schools. And they were looking, they recognized that what the children were eating wasn't helping them in their academics, and they also recognized that the children had an interest in cooking, and so they were hoping to be able to develop a program in their school. So we did a pilot, and in the pilot, we added to the elementary schools, we added gardening, and we also wanted the children to understand how food was produced. So there was really a food systems education, and then at this level, we also thought it was really important that we really stressed the impacts and associations between the choices that they made and their health. So we don't do that as much in the younger grades, but we definitely focused on that at this age. So as we did that, we had two schools in our pilot, and I'm going to present the high school in Brooklyn, that data. We also had a after-school component called Teen Iron Chef. Teen Iron Chef is a much smaller, so our in-school time, usually this classes are about 25 students. We had half the grade. There were four classes in a grade. We had half the grade in the intervention, 50 students. The other half were our control. For after school, we have a much smaller capacity. It's 12 students. It's Teen Iron Chef. That means two groups of 6 teens that are battling with each other to make different recipes. They don't. It's not like the real Iron Chef, where they're just given ingredients and have to figure it out. No, it's all prescribed. The curriculum comes with a background, well, the full recipe, background on the ethnicity of the recipe, and also background on the nutritional profile of the recipe. And what the students have to do in a half an hour, they have to prep and be ready to present it, and they all must participate. They get graded on all these different participation aspects, including presenting the nutrition and presenting the ethnicity of the, and talking about the ethnicity and how this recipe is related to the culture. And all of that really has all of these additional youth development goals. So group collaboration, problem solving, poise in public speaking, becoming peer educators about nutrition. These are what we were trying to do with Teen Iron Chef, and we had pretty extraordinary results on that, you'll see. So thank God for Dr. Judy Wiley-Rosette over at Albert Einstein to help us really design the kind of with the kind of rigor that we wanted in evaluation that we could actually do something with these results. So, as I mentioned, we had 50 students in the two intervention schools for the first year, and now we've expanded now to two additional schools. We are 4 this year with the after school only, and I'll explain why. For our adoption in this REAIM framework, for our adoption measures, and it's like a process evaluation, we sent weekly SurveyMonkey links to the teachers so that we could get feedback about, you know, how it was going, if there was lesson fidelity, all of that. For the efficacy measures, we did pre and post surveys, and what we did was we used the youth risk behavior surveillance from the CDC. We took about 13 questions about dietary habits, and we added to that a number of other questions that were very specific to our program. And we also did focus groups, and then we did what we call a performance evaluation. One of our goals was, do these kids really learn how to cook? So what we did was we had culinary assessment. And I actually went in, any of the teachers that we trained could have done this, and we had them in 3 groups, and one group had to show us they could use a knife, and they had to be able to use slicing techniques and dicing techniques correctly, and they all got rated. The other group, so these were going on simultaneously, the other group had to create a recipe of their own. These were some very interesting recipes that we got, but they had to follow the correct process for creating a recipe. And the third group, they had to prepare a recipe that they weren't familiar with from the beginning and use all the proper measuring, proper procedures for setting up their mise en place and everything. And you know what? They loved this test. They thought that was so cool, particularly the knife skills. They were all coming up, can I get my knife skills tested? It was very cute. implementation, we did have the kids do some journal writing, so we were able to review those. And I have to say, the food diaries were about what they ate that day. It was pretty enlightening to me. I expected to see a lot of junk food. There was junk food, but what was more startling to me was really the lack of fresh food in general. There was so much protein and carbohydrates in those food diaries. You know, much more than the candy and chips that you would have expected. There was some of that. But the meals were so heavy in potatoes and so much chicken, so many burgers, French fries. It was pretty shocking to me. I'm going to skip over maintenance because I want to be able to explain that after I show you what the results were. So here are some... But before I can go over these results, I have to tell you that the ninth grade, the results I'm presenting are from the ninth grade high school students, right? I have to tell you, this was one of the very most difficult interventions I have ever participated in. This ninth grade kids, they gave me so much gray hair. They were very difficult to engage. When we cooked with them once a week, they were pretty happy. But the other days, we could not cook every single day. We had a partnership coordinator in that school. She was responsible for literally getting the pots and pans and all this set up an hour before the class. Then she helped with the class, and I had other people coming to help just to facilitate, not to teach. And then she was there for the next hour afterward, going to the kitchen of the cafeteria and washing dishes. So that was something that was not going to be sustainable. But so on top of all of that stress, so you could see, we could not cook every day. These kids were not happy about reading, clips from articles by Michael Pollan. They liked the movies that we showed. That was helpful. We used a lot of YouTube links in the classroom. This was a very techie school. We did a food assessment around the community to see what was available of quality to eat. And they liked leaving the school. I had a really rough time with the group that I took to the grocery store until at the end at the grocery store I told them that I would buy them any fruit or vegetable snack that they would like. And I thought that they would pick up bananas, apples, pears. That's not what they picked up. They picked up whole containers of cut up watermelon and whole giant containers of strawberries. So my tab was high, but I had a lot of happy students as we left there. And I really informed me about, you know, how smart our school food is, for instance, that they're taking the apples and cutting them up and processing them and putting them up in these little bags because they really want this convenience. Okay, so predicating that, I swear to you, I really did not expect to have anything. I didn't expect to be standing here with any positive results, but somehow we did. So our attitudes about cooking, you see a big improvement. And some of the questions that we asked, it would imply that there was actually behavior changing too, so that was less. But about food choices, learning how food produced. We had some kids, after they saw the movie Our Daily Bread, that they would now become vegetarians. Of course, this was not our intention, but some of these images and things the kids saw were very powerful. Willingness to try new food, oh my God, from the day one to the very end, these kids were actually very excited that they had been given the opportunity in a program like this to taste so many different things. And that includes, when we got to the garden, the flower sandwiches that we wanted them to try because we were growing nasturtiums and edible flowers. And those are some of the only things you can actually harvest in a school garden in May. What can you harvest? So, but at first they were so, you know, frightened of the idea of eating a flower. We had kids just look at me and say, you know, lady, are you mad crazy? But one girl did try it, and then of course a few others would try after that. But here's where we really saw impact. Look at the dietary quality change. I want to explain how we measured that. What we did was we assigned a value to those 13 questions in the survey about dietary choices. We assigned a value, and there were higher values to the answers with good choices and lower values for the questions with the more junk food types of choices. And so that's how we measured this. And the kids that were in the intervention had a 20% improvement change, and the control had a change too, and we don't really know why that is, but I guess because there was a lot of nice smells wafting and there was discussion of what we were doing in the halls. In Teen Iron Chef, it's a very small cohort, so it's not statistically significant, but we also had a 22% change. And then we also saw a correlation between the changes in their dietary quality with the kids who really were helping to prepare snacks for themselves, having more meals sitting down. So we expected those correlations, but it was positive to see that. Now, some of the comments. Oh, these came out a little crazy, but I always wanted to cook, to learn to cook. Now I love doing it. I used to think eating healthy was eating a fruit a day and taking your vitamin. Now what I see is more than that. I love to eat fruits and vegetables to keep healthy. So these are the kids that were, you know, giving us such a hard time, and then here's what they were feeding back at the end. I used to think if it smells bad, I wouldn't eat it. Because of this cooking class, I ate something that smelled bad but tasted good. I used to think I should try new foods. I should try new foods. Now, try new foods. Now I do it. So these were very exciting things to read. Now, these are the unanticipated results. My Teen Iron Chef cohort, that's a group of kids that started out with 10 and 7 diehard states. It's only a 7-week program. These kids blew us away with their leadership development and their interest in being peer educators. So in addition to completing the program and doing a health fair presentation for Dr. Oz, we hooked them up this summer with our green market program, where they have a youth markets. And the youth markets, the kids sell in their neighborhoods healthy food, farm fresh food in their communities. These kids sold fresh food all summer and did 15 cooking demos in farmers markets all over 5 boroughs of the city. They were amazing. And I used my grad student to supervise this because we didn't really have the capacity to be there, and we didn't need to be with them. They were amazing. They were really, really stunning. So what we're doing now to maintain the program, I told you I was going to tell you about the sustainability, is now what we're doing is we're developing in any new school a cohort of a whole team of the Iron Chefs. They'll start first, and then they will help. They'll be older students, so they will be able to build the capacity of the school to be able to teach this education, because they will help set up as part of their senior elective and community service. They'll set up our program coordinator was doing. She doesn't have to do that anymore. The Teen Iron Chefs will do all of that work, and we'll be able to raise the capacity of schools to have this education by having these peer educators in teams of them in the schools being able to set up this education. So I think I'm running out of time. I just want to say that we do train these programs all over in different communities, so we're very excited that we finally had some real research that was statistically significant to present. Thank you.
It's certainly good to have data, and that you like the way it comes out. It's even more.